Our next speaker this morning, the Reverend Dr. Piotr Krakowiak, is a theologian, a psychologist, and social educator and lecturer at Nicholas Copernicus University. He has been involved in hospice and palliative care in Poland, Italy, and the United States, lecturing at the social work, social sciences, and pastoral theology department at his university. He conducts research regarding volunteering, spiritual care, and non-medical issues of the end-of-life care. He is the author of academic textbooks, numerous general publication textbooks, and articles in peer-reviewed journals. He's been involved as one of the experts in European Academy of Palliative Care. He is currently preparing a series of articles and a textbook regarding the shift from religious assistance into spiritual care in health and social institutions in Poland. His presentation today is entitled, Who Should Do What? Improving End-of-Life Care in Poland. Please join me in welcoming Dr. Krakowiak.
For the introduction, the spelling of my last name was perfect because we trained that before, and I'm so glad to be here. Thank you that I think I'm the only one, the keynote speaker from Eastern Europe, that you recognize that this part of Europe is an important part as well. There are some others from my part of this continent here. So I'll try to say something about Poland, but it will be also this part of Europe that is more traditional, more religious, but it has also a great need of spirituality. So just as we've seen the presentation of Malta, now this short presentation of Poland, traditionally you see the still tradition and you see the different religion. Jewish people, for many centuries it was the home for Jewish communities that were expelled from other parts of Europe. They were home in Poland, big, up to 30-40% of our population that unfortunately disappeared after the Holocaust tragedy in the 20th century. And we have Catholics, that majority, but we have also Orthodox, we have Muslims, small numbers, around 90% of our population now is Catholic, but there is a growing number of those who are searching, who are asking the questions, as it happens in all other parts of Europe. So, who should do what? I was asked to answer to that, and it's on the base of history of hospice and palliative care in Poland. I'm sure you're not aware of that. We are publishing the book about that, so I'd like to give you a short information about that. First of all, after the war, we were nationalized by the regime, so everything was communists and the priests, the chaplains, Catholic, Protestant, Orthodox, Jewish, were not allowed to be part of the healthcare system. We were only allowed to be in extremis, which usually didn't work in the sense that the doctors, nurses, everybody else were religious. They wanted the religious people to be. Then it has changed in the 1980s with the Solidarity and, of course, with John Paul II, the Pope that was a kind of ambassador, a speaker of our needs in all the Eastern Europe that were under the communist regime. So there was a concordat that allowed chaplains to be part of the healthcare, social care teams, big clinicians recognized. Then there was the first steps of the trainings that took some years, as you see, 1999, the first international conference, then 2009, there was the beginning of thinking of training of chaplains. And it was all based on the good practices of hospice care, which has started. We were lucky, and you will see how it came to be. We were lucky because Dame Cicely Saunders was a great friend of Paul's. if you read her biography, she fell in love with David Tashma, the Polish Jew. He was her first patient. Then she married a Polish artist from Krakow, and that was the reason that she was visiting Poland in the difficult times in Krakow, Warsaw, and Poland. She gave lectures. Many doctors, students, and nurses were able to go there. If you visit St. Christopher's, there is still the window that David Tashma has offered the money for the first hospice, for first modern hospice. So the St. Christopher's in London was a model for the Krakow hospice. And look, 15 years it took to build that building. It was not only to build the building, it was to change the mind. The hospice was something that was the difficult time of the last years of the communist regime, but this team of Krakow have made a lot of social education about end of life, dying, death, and bereavement. And the second place was Gdańsk, north of Poland, that you're probably familiar with, Solidarity, Solidarność. And we were lucky. From one side there was a martial law, you see the policemen beating the people. From the other side, we had a great people who were the first hospice volunteers. Our president, Lech Walesa, was among the first volunteers in hospice. Home care, taking care of one of the Solidarity leaders, who was agnostic, but he received a holistic care with the spiritual care. So the Professor Panson was another one, and Father Dutkiewicz, who we call the founder of modern hospice movement in Poland. And of course we have a great promoters of hospice movement. In 1987 Pope John Paul II visited Poland, and he said, I think with appreciation of hospice. And that was a great promotion. All the bishops heard that, and all of them wanted to have a hospice in their own diocese. So we had really a lot, and it was the time that everything was done for free. Doctors, nurses, everybody else was all voluntary base. It was an amazing time. Everybody was volunteering. We had almost 100 centers, mostly home care. By the parishes, there was the telephone number of the parish priest was the telephone number of the hospice. The car of the parish priest was the car of the hospice. And it was a group of people who just wanted to do something because it was a bad situation in healthcare system. And we were angry that we are not allowed. I think we would compare that to the situation in Ukraine today. Really that we wanted to change something. So when we eventually got the independence and democracy, we started to develop the hospice care in Poland, and it spread quite widely. It's just the biggest number of hospice centers in Eastern Europe, and then I think we are in the fourth or fifth place in whole Europe. So it has been with the great support of the church, the Catholic Church. I think there is one program of Orthodox Church of hospice and two of the Protestant Church in Poland. We have seen also the chaplains who were involved. They really felt to be part of the teams. They are always invited for the... It is not the case in other areas of health or social care. So it is also, I think, the shift, the difference that hospices were able to include, because from the very beginning spirituality was part of the holistic care. And we sense some resistance in healthcare, social care, in other areas. So after 2004, as Malta, we just celebrated the 10th anniversary of joining European Union, so it gives us new possibilities, new chances. Apart that we have more than 3 million people emigrating from Poland, mostly young people, and many of our young doctors, nurses, and others are probably working your shifts now when you're here, some of them. So we have also some positive effects, like for example this ecumenical project that we are doing for the people who are severely ill, handicapped, or aging at home. We have an aging society in Poland, so we were able, and you have seen here who of you can read Russian, we recently published that book in Russian, to give that tool for all the people who are on the east side of our borders, because the situation there is much worse than it is in our place. So it's been distributed already in Ukraine, but also in Belarus and in Russia. So These are the backgrounds. You can see the Europe here, European Association of Palliative Care published that last year, and we have 476 units, which places us in the first place in Eastern Europe, but also, well, even our Western neighbor, Germany, has a less percent of service per inhabitants than we do, which with our limited resources in Poland is quite an achievement. The same when you see about the different ways of care, we have a very well developed home care system, which is the best way at the end of life to take care of the person and also of different areas of holistic needs, including the religious and spiritual ones. And here, in the last 5 years, the European Union stresses that home care is the best way. I think UK program of the end-of-life strategy has been an example for others how it should be implemented, that home should be the place of choice and the best place of ending of life. And so we have also developed that quite significantly. And we had a good experience in end-of-life care, and we were able to include religious and spiritual care into the holistic care in end-of-life care. But it is not the case in hospitals, nursing homes, in other health and social care institutions. So in 2009, with St. John of God order, Boni Fratres, as you call them, Fate Bene Fratelli in Italiano, some of you speak Italian, is the order that have started this new approach. Something that I would call, that we try to introduce the CPE, something in English-speaking world that you just assume that it's everywhere. It's not. It's not. And we have still people who just received a letter from the superiors or the bishops to be a chaplain and have nothing to do with that before. Sometimes it's like they were not good in the parish work, not good in the school, not good in other jobs, so okay, the happy place will be the hospital. Well, that's the reality. That's the reality in my part of the world, and I'm afraid it's not only there. So what we have, the situation that we have is one chaplain for many patients. Imagine I was a chaplain in 1993, my first job after ordination. 1,000 beds hospital, university hospital, and I was alone. In that time we were not allowed to allow the lay people to distribute the communion. So I was like a busy machine of distributing communion. 1,000 people there, 700-800 would like to receive communion on sacraments or everything. How are you going to do that? And then you had doctors, nurses who were Catholics, but they didn't know how to relate to you, so they were closing the doors, they were making that they don't see you, they were not cooperating, they didn't know how to do that. Only with the time you made friends with different words, and then you started to work together. It was kind of, but there is no tradition. And also the barrier is that we are wearing our outfits, we are going very officially dressed, we have our uniforms and our shields, so we don't want to be approached. In the south of Poland still, the people will ask if I'm a doctor, and the priest is going, shall I kneel on one knee or two knees? See, because he is bringing the Holy Sacrament, the Eucharist, Jesus, so the people still have this dilemmas. So we try to change, to start to change the idea of single chaplain that is really sacramental, ritualistic, but in more routine way. Yesterday I was listening to these, rituals. Great. But if the rituals are very, let's say, formal, has nothing, no connectedness, and you have 20 people and you have no time to talk. So it's another side of the coin of ritual. So we are just trying to make this ritual more personal. So we try to make this, that the team of chaplain, team members and volunteers can work for the patients, families, and also the caring team. Something that probably you assume it's obvious. It's not always and not everywhere. Well, most of the Catholic hierarchy is telling me, why should we include spirituality into religious pastoral care? Look, Poland scores high in weekly church attendance with their leaders. Over 50% of people going every week to the church. Only Ireland trying to, it's 44, but I think it's falling down. There is no Malta here, but I'm sure it scores high as well. Yes, I would say. But you know, you can be optimistic, say, well, we're doing great. Well, we have this research of 2010 of the Dominicantes, so the people who go on Sunday to the church, and it's falling down. Well, the awareness of what is communion and everything is raising, so there is a bigger number of those who go to the Holy Communion. But we have a tendency in last years, that trend of Dominicantes, so these who are attending every week is going down. In recent 10 years, people are traveling, people are going around, people are seeing that, there are different ways of expressing their religiousness or spirituality, and you cannot stop that. I mean, and I'm talking to my colleagues, parish priests, and they're saying, there is less people. I've been to the same hospital I started, and I was busy to distribute the communion. Now, a year ago, I has been in the same wards. And there was not such many people who were willing to receive the communion right away. They were willing to talk, to ask, to spend some time, but not automatically to receive the sacraments. And that's a big shift in 20 years' time that, from my personal experience, I noticed in the same hospital in Gdańsk. And so, when the people ask in Poland, why should we include spirituality, I say, well, we have started in 1970s to discuss about spirituality, talking about hospice worldwide. There was the first, and we heard that in Christina's lecture about that, how around 80% of medical schools in the U.S. have the spirituality as a topic. There is 0% of spirituality in universities in Poland. Well, we have theology departments, but there is no connection, no link between the healthcare departments and theology departments. They are two, you know, ivory towers. Everybody has a knowledge, everybody has a language, there is no bridge, no connection. I think we should change that. Of course, we do the studies, and there are studies of religiousness, and there is Lublin and Krakow that have published some of that. But you see one of the scales, it's a scale to measure the religious orthodoxy of the Catholics. But there are a variety of other spiritual needs that need to be addressed as well. So we have started in 2010, and here it is Professor Bising, and the one that is making the bridge between the Poland and Germany, Professor Suszykiewicz, who became ill because being a bridge and flying from Warsaw to Munich back and forth causes some trouble. But here is the research that has been presented already, and I just have to say that just to compare two neighboring countries gives you a lot of interesting insight. Here you see something that is maybe so obvious for some Western societies, that religiosity is separated from transcendence experience and secular humanism. We are still in Poland, and I think in Eastern Europe, in this first phase there, religiosity and the spiritual experience is within the religiosity. Maybe sometimes there are people who are saying we are in the middle phase. Maybe. But there are tendencies to say, no, we, what is spiritual has to be necessarily religious. We have heard so much about that, so we know that this situation is changing, and it's changing in Poland as well. So we have here, it's published. Professor Bising told me that it's already published in three different parts. These are the 270 patients from Poland and over 800 in Germany. And there was the beliefs, attitudes, well-being, and practices that have been compared. And just very briefly to show you that something that scored very high, over 80%, that someone prays for you, participation at the religious ceremony, pray for yourself, and turn to a higher presence in the religious factors. Over 80% of patients agreed in Poland, and when you see in Germany, it's less than 50%, 45%. So it's a big shift, but there's other research showing that this tendency is also changing in Poland. So we will have the same situation, and we have to be prepared for that. I think both the clergy and also the other people, health and social care workers, who will be trained in spirituality as well. So we had a conversation or meeting with a very significant place, the Palace Kultury i Nauki. So that's the gift that we received from Russia, from rather Soviet Union in Warsaw. That's this, some say, ugly place in center of Warsaw, but it has a big venue. So more than 3,000 physicians have came, and Professor Krystyna Puchalski was the one that addressed the for the first time in Poland, although her parents are from Poland. So now, because I have heard that some people wanted to hear more from Krystyna, I give you a chance to hear her in Polish. A few sentences. She speaks Polish very well. So. So that was just the beginning of her lecture, and I think that for the first time for such a big group of physicians, we were able to tell about spirituality, which is understood broader than religiosity only. That is something that everyone, both those who are religious, who are connected to the faith communities, and also those who search themselves, search the place for themselves, or they are not believers, that they can find themselves. So we, after that, with the St. John order, we have started the initial research. We have two groups, the ones who've finished this postgraduate school, and they are the ordained priests, the nuns, and lay people. And these are in this blue. And chaplains, the Catholic chaplains who were also asked and researched. There was a research of 200 of chaplains and 100 of these people who, and the exact data is in the poster down there, so you can see. But what is interesting, to sit and to talk was important for 74% of these people who were trained for most broader, and only for 18% of chaplains. Chaplains did believe in that research that, you know, sacraments, giving the anointing of the sick, giving communion or confession, part, sacramental part, is the most important. And of course, sacraments and rituals was important for 66% of chaplains, but it was also important for this new group, this open for the spirituality, which means that the new spirituality approach is not excluding the rituals or traditions that are very strong in Poland. It's including both, one side and the other. And also, when we see the difference between religious and spiritual care, we see, for example, that chaplains are saying that only they are the ones, 36% of them said, that only in the presence of priests or religious person, the people can address some spiritual needs. And it's the case only in 2% of those who are trained, which is a promising that everyone really, both from the part of professionals and volunteers, can address and answer for the spiritual needs. And of course, also the lay people would say that their requests are mainly spiritual. 63% of them would say that it's more spiritual than religious, and only 12% of ordained chaplains would say that the requests were spiritual, mainly spiritual. Of course, just the initial, we can see here in the middle, that's a typical Polish chaplain wearing the liturgical garment and going even to the intensive care units. And for example, the nuns, the religious nuns, we have many of them. What is funny, they work all over the world, they can distribute communion, they come back to Poland, they cannot. I mean, there is a regulation, they can, but traditionally they wouldn't dare. There is still people's approach. Oh, no, the communion should be distributed by the priest. Or maybe by the lay deacon, permanent deacon, or maybe the somebody else, men, but women. And the lay people who are there. So, if you think it happened in our country 40, 30 years ago, it's the truth. Now it's happening in Poland. We need to change it, preserving the tradition, but also entering with this, because I am sure from the experience of hospice that sensitivity of women listening is different from this of men who are running from one task to another and so on. So being together is something that we really need and want to achieve. That's the steps. And I hope with FICA that we are translating, and with other tools that have been translated already, and I heard that Gdańsk is doing some job, we will be progressing into that direction. And of course we need some further education, and I think it's also the challenge to start at least in one university to do the education and spiritual care in health and social care, and I think that's something that has to be continued, and I hope for the next conference we might have a first result, or maybe the first place that will be. And of course, being here in Malta, I would say why not meet next time or the next meeting in, well, that's welcome to Poland anyway. And I just want to end up with showing you that change is possible. It's the last 10 years that we had still this negative image that hospice is a horrible place, that you don't dare to talk about that, that you're not showing that in the public or whatever. We started the campaign of social education. As I mentioned, we started with schools. All the schools in Poland received their textbooks how to deal with the end of life when somebody is ill, when somebody, and the teachers were so grateful for that. They said, nobody helped us to do that. We didn't know how to deal with that. Death, dying, bereavement. And then with this, we started to have from schools the volunteers. My hospice in Gdańsk had more than 80 schools involved. So you had thousands of people who were coming, and it was, volunteering, but also the social education. We had hospice weeks, fall time in October, November, and there is always most of the public media is involved to do about the end-of-life care and how it is possible to talk in that in a different way. Of course, you need to connect the traditional ways, and it was in the 87 the Pope's blessing, as I said, he was a great promoter. Then half a year before his death, he also gave us a special blessing for this new campaign, Hospice is Also Life. And then we had also another chance to meet with the Pope Benedict to prepare our nationwide campaign for volunteering in hospice. And so there is a need of institutional help of the church, of other faith institutions, as we are collaborating also with the Protestant and Orthodox churches. And it's possible to use the enthusiasm of youth, and that's what we've experienced with this hospice volunteering. I think you need also to ask them, and this is the way that they, in the public sphere, and they talk about that. It's not a taboo anymore. It's something important. And talking about spirituality and change, sometimes you need to reach to the areas that you would never say it's possible to reach. And I'll show you the example, and I'm sure you'll be surprised. We found the volunteers for hospice and palliative care among the prisoners. Not only like it is in the States, that the prisoners are helping other prisoners to die well within the facility. Yes, it is quite a well-developed system, and this is, I think, a good thing to help. But we have grown out our well-prepared prisoners, selected carefully, can work in the open hospices and palliative care units, and this program has started by the basic needs, that there was no money to run the place, and I was the head of the place managing that, so I asked the correctional facility to start. And then one of the prisoners was a medical doctor. And he'd say, look, I will spend 12 hours a day here, 7 days a week, just to not go back to that facility. So please, and he said, okay, let's develop together the program of training of the prisoners as volunteers. And he helped me. His sentence, he was drinking driving and he killed 3 people. So his sentence was shortened of half because of his good behavior, what he's done, and all the others, we have had for 10 years, I think, more than 400 of those prisoners who were carefully selected with the chaplain of the correctional facility, psychologist, and we trained them. And now we received the Crystal Scale of Justice, the prize for the best rehabilitation program in Europe. And now there are over 30 hospices and 100 nursing homes that are using that kind of atypical, let's say, tool of those who want to change, and those who also experience that their spiritual life is changing. And there is some research done, and you can follow that on the European Journal of Palliative Care, and we do some more research about that. So you can be surprised. Sometimes the spirituality goes beyond the prison bars and the other places. There is, I think, infinity of these possibilities that you can find if you search for that. And then, of course, at the end, we see the Pope Francis, this picture that I think with a very ill person with metastasis, as you see, that he was so courageous to embrace him. And it's an example for us to be open and to be, and I just put both the priests, but also the volunteers and other doctors, nurses that can work together. That's a goal we want to achieve. That's something that we want to learn, and that's what I wanted to share. If there are any comments or any questions, I'll be happy to answer, and thank you very much for your attention.
I feel appreciate your presenting, especially you invite a prisoner into this great activity. Do you follow the study on the spiritual chair of the prisoner who take part in this study? Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I will. We will now, and I hope we will be able, with FICA tool and with other tools that we are working on, to be able to show that the spiritual needs differ from the religious needs of our patients. Because so far, when I ask the chaplains what data they have about how they help the patients, they can tell me how many communion they have distributed and how many confessions or anointing of the sick they have performed, which is important part, but I think the spiritual needs go far beyond that. So we want to continue and to also to see, to compare with both with Germany and also in the more international context. Thank you.
Thank you for Rachel. I'm Emily from Germany. I'm just wondering how far the chaplains are adapted in team members in clinical settings, because you presented in your slide that chaplains members are separated as team members, but for corporations or effective teamwork, I think it is an important point that chaplains could be also team members. So I'm just interested how far it is in Poland.
Thank you. The process is, as I said, that in hospice and palliative care, it's obvious that chaplains are the team members, and that the doctors, nurses, social workers, and volunteers can address the spiritual issues, because we talk about that, and it's part of the culture. It's not the case in the hospitals. It starts to be like, we start with these Catholic hospitals, like St. John of God Order, and with these postgraduate students, we start to teach them about that. But the biggest resistance is from the side of the chaplains themselves. They see they don't need that help. But on the other side, when you call them, ask them, they're not available. They have two other jobs. So there is this discrepancy. They say, we are there, but when they are there for 1 hour a day to distribute the communion, but they're not there for talking about spiritual needs for the longer time. They have no time. So we try to say, look, if we create the team, then there will be a better way to answer the needs of the patients, which are varied. And of course, there is an issue of money. Who pays for that? So it's always a challenge. But for now, we're saying, let's start with volunteering. Those who want, and there are doctors, nurses who want to address this issue as students, let's start with volunteering. 30 years ago we started hospice with volunteering. Now we are the leading position in whole Eastern Europe. So we need to start like that, to do some research and to convince also the managers that taking care of spiritual will improve the quality of life of the patients, will improve the image of the institution, which I think is now quite important to them as well, when this healthcare system in Poland is privatizing as well as everywhere else.
Thank you for a great presentation. I really enjoyed it. I'm Jackie Watts from the OEM. I just wondered whether you could say a little bit, if it's appropriate, about the reaction of hospice patients to the care they receive from, if you like, the prisoner volunteers. I'd be interested to know what they think about that.
I think in hospice, the culture of common working for both priests and workers and volunteers is well accepted, and we know right away if somebody is not religious. We don't send the priest there. We just, usually it's the volunteer that starts, or maybe the nurse. These are the people who are relating to that. And then only on the second stage, if there is a need of religious assistance, we might ask the priest to come. But quite often people say, no, I'm happy with that, what you are doing. So I think it's in a way what you were saying about the end-of-life doula. That's the person that sometimes we say, me as a chaplain in the hospice, I often would say to the volunteers or to the nurses, you made the most part of the spiritual job. I just go to kind of end it up with the confession, with the anointing of the sick, and with the communion of viaticum before the death. But the most part of the job was done by the volunteers or by nurses, physiotherapists, those who have a personal contact with the patient. There is intimacy there. There is a willingness to share. When you come as a professional, as a priest or as a psychologist, you're there for a few minutes. There is no time for that sharing. I think it is much more when somebody has a contact with the patient. So that's how we work, and that's why I believe it's possible also in this hospital and other institutions.
And are the prisoner volunteers, are they seen as different by the patients from other volunteers?
No prisoners. When we started, of course didn't announce that because we were afraid ourselves how the people would react. But after a while, because they passed through the training, they received the same t-shirt as all the other volunteers. So the only difference that used to be were the tattoos. But now, with the fashion of tattoos going beyond the prisons, there is no difference anymore. So, in fact, the prisoners are considered the team members. What is happening when they are finishing the sentence? Usually, they finish the sentence before the term because of the good behavior, and we write them the letters that they work very well in hospice. So they know already in the penitential structure that if you work in hospice, you will be out of the jail earlier. So they are, it's a really a good career ladder. If you're good enough, if you work with your psychotherapist in the prison, you might be the volunteer in hospice. If you are a volunteer in hospice, you might receive a letter that, you know, the court will recognize that you've done something good for the society. I can tell you, they receive also the letters that they worked, and it's like a semi-professional. They are like nursing aid. Well, most of them, to change their life and to escape from the places that they, you know, made bad things, they decide to go to the Western Europe and work in the healthcare system and nursing homes in UK, in Scandinavia, in Germany. So, you might meet them. They are our volunteers. But don't mix them with the doctors and nurses that emigrate for work.
Just one more from Freiburg University. Peter, thank you very much for this wonderful presentation and all the fascinating elements. I got two questions. One is about money. There are so many hospices now in Poland. Are they still all on a voluntary basis, or who is paying? Second question, is your voice being heard in the church in Poland? That is, what you're saying about the clergy is quite sort of disturbing. There should be a need of formation right from the start. I don't know if you want to tackle this question.
Yeah. Thank you, Klaus, very much for the questions. Money, yes, hospice were lucky because one of the first volunteers was Lech Wałęsa, which was the president of Poland. So in the 90s, when we got democracy, voluntary-based hospices were kind of absorbed by the healthcare system. So we receive money, but usually it is like 50 to 60% of the budget of the hospice that is by the healthcare service, NHS in the UK, or the Krankenkassen in Germany. But 40%, 30%, it depends of the center, you need to raise money. So one of the ways of create so many volunteers is also that volunteers help you to raise money. So they start raising money, and some of them then become the medical volunteers. They are with the patients, but initially they just go around and they ask for money because you need. And of course the lines, waiting lines for the hospice is growing. So that's why we started also this another option to raise awareness in parishes, that the parish can create the so-called volunteer circles and to go to this elderly or ill at home, which now we have a lot of elderly people and the young people emigrate. So that is a difficult moment. And talking the second point about the clergy, yes, I'm trying to talk about that in various contexts, in bishop conference and in different conferences. There is a progress, there is an awareness growing, but I think it's a slow process. I am in this research, there is that the chaplains are very keen to cooperate. In research they say so. In practice, it's not always the case. I think you need to be patient, you need time to do that, but I think it will come, because the simple reason is we have many priests. Still many priests. I think in Malta it's also the case that there is enough vocation. You export the vocation from here. In Poland, you hardly find any diocese in the world that there is no Polish priest. So we have many. It's one of our... I think it's also the numbers in the seminaries are going down. I hope there will be still enough, but we should be open for cooperation. It's good not only because you don't have a priest. It's good also because it's a model of the church. That it's the church open for the others, for lay people, for the religious people. So it's a process that you need to knock to the doors. And, well, we have a Pope Francis. I think he helps a lot to understand that this cooperation is something important.
Thank you very much, Peter. I'm Bernadette Flanagan from Dublin City University, Ireland. And I suppose sharing something of colonial history and its impact on how spiritual care is developing now is a shared link that we would have. And what I'm wondering is that during the time when the public practice of religion wasn't possible, were there systems of spiritual care available within the community? And were women more involved in these systems of spiritual care? Did the rise of the Catholic Church after oppression lead to the suppression of indigenous spiritual care systems? This is something that we would have in Ireland in particular.
Thank you. I think we, on the local basis, in local communities, we have involvement of the people, both lay people and religious people, many of them women. And I want, the first step that I want to make in creating these teams will be the religious women to be the nuns that will be the ones that will start that. Because if you have this barrier of the traditional, that only the ordained priest can distribute the communion, the people, that's what I noticed, will accept that the nun will distribute the communion. And then hopefully the next step will be that also the lay people, men and women, will be the one who will be involved. And that's a process. Right now we have started with religious nuns, but this postgraduate school, the most of the students are women. And there are physicians, nurses, social workers, psychologists who are coming. So that's, I think from my experience in hospice, the women are the best to arrive to the needs, spiritual needs of those who have no ready answers, who are not a good Catholics or whatever, good practicing of any religion. Those who have more complicated curricula, you need to have time to talk, to discern, and the women, volunteers and nurses are the ones who do that the best. Thank you.